drunk on youth and beer, being funny, or at least loud, as they stood before the urinals. Two of them were finding it amusing to move their hands back and forth in front of the electric eyes to make the urinals keep flushing. One exclaimed to the other, "What do you mean, a slut? She told me she's been revirginated!" They both broke up over that. "She actually said that? Revirginated? Yeah, revirginated or born again virgin, something like that. Maybe she thinks that's what morning after pills do." They both broke up again. They had reached that stage in a college boy's evening at which all comments seem more devastatingly funny if shouted. Urinals kept flushing, boys kept disintegrating over one another's wit, and somewhere in the long row of toilet cubicles, somebody was vomiting. Then the door would open and swarm would come crashing in again. None of this distracted the only student who at this moment stood before the row of basins. His attention was riveted on what he saw in the mirror, which was his own fair white face. A gale was blowing in his head. He liked it. He bared his teeth. He had never seen them quite this way before, so even. So white, they vibrated from perfection. And his square jaw, that chin with the perfect cleft in it, his thick, thatchy, light brown hair, those brilliant hazel eyes, his, right there in the mirror, him. All at once he felt like he was a second person looking over his own shoulder. The first him was mesmerized by his own good looks. Seriously. But the second him studied the face in the mirror with detachment and objectivity before coming to the same conclusion, which was that he looked awesome. Then the two of him inspected his upper arms where they emerged from the sleeves of his polo shirt. He turned sideways and straightened one arm to make the triceps stand out. Jacked, both hims agreed. He had never felt happier in his life. Not only that, he was on the verge of a profound discovery. It had to do with one person looking at the world through two pairs of eyes. If only he could freeze this moment in his mind and remember it tomorrow and write it down. Tonight he couldn't, not with a ruckus that was going on inside his skull.
"Yo, Hoyt, sup?"
He looked away from the mirror. And there was Vance, with his head of blonde hair tousled as usual. They were in the same fraternity. In fact, Vance was the president. Hoyt had an overwhelming desire to tell him what he had just discovered. He opened his mouth, but couldn't find the words, and nothing came out. So he turned his palms upward and smiled and shrugged.
"Looking good, Hoyt,"
said Vance as he approached the urinals.
"Looking good."
Hoyt knew it really meant he looked very drunk, but in his current sublime state, what difference did it make?
"Hey, Hoyt,"
said Vance, who now stood before a urinal.
"I saw you upstairs there, hitting on that little tig bitty. Tell the truth, you really, honestly think she's hot?"
"Could I get a bigger boner?"
said Hoyt, who was trying to say, "Could I get a bigger boner?" and vaguely realized how far off he was.
"Sounding good, too," said Vance.
He turned away in order to pay attention to the urinal, but then he looked at Hoyt once more and said with a serious tone in his voice,
"You know what I think? I think you're demolished, Hoyt. I think it's time to head back while your lights are still on."
Hoyt put up an incoherent argument, but not much of one, and pretty soon they left the building. It was a mild May night, with a pleasant breeze and a full moon whose light created just enough of a gloaming to reveal the singular wave-like roof of the theater, known officially here at the university as the Phipps Opera House, one of the architect Eero Saarinen's famous 1950s modern creations. The theater's entrance, ablaze with light, cast a path of fire across a plaza and out upon a row of sycamore trees at the threshold of another of the campus's renowned ornaments, the Grove. From the moment he founded DuPont University 115 years ago, Charles